Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 394. Thanks if you watched Talking Bad last night, which was the after show to Breaking Bad, so you probably would have watched that too if you watched our show. It was so much fun. Vince Gilligan and Julie Bowen. And Vince, if you listen to the podcast he was on last week, you could just... He's such a sweet, nice guy, but has such great information. My only regret is that our show's only a half hour long, so we just didn't have as much time to dig in. But that episode last night of Breaking Bad was so good. It makes me mad how good that show is. So we will be on again next week. We'll have cast members from the show on throughout the run of the next 7 episodes. So... I'm sad. I have that sort of anxiety of like, oh, I'm anxious about the stuff that's going on in the show, and now I'm anxious about the fact that it's going to be over. I don't like series finales. I always kind of flip out when a doctor regenerates or when a show ends, or I just feel this like, why is it leaving me? I wonder what that's all about. I'd like to thank Stamps.com for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Here's a fun, not so fun tale. I got notice in the mail that I had a piece of mail that had to be picked up at the post office. So I go down to the post office. Haven't been in the post office for a while. Fascinated that they still exist, that there isn't just some sort of a weird, personless place that dispenses all of the postal things that we need. So I'm standing in the post office. There's only a couple people in line. There's 4 people at the counters, 4 postal workers at the counters, and it's like, oh, this is not so bad. Then all of a sudden, a huge line of people shows up right as I get there, and 2 of the postal workers shut their windows down. So then all of a sudden now, like, 14 people are narrowed down to the 2 remaining postal carriers. I'm sure they had good reasons for doing what they did, but what, you know, should have been probably like a 10-minute trip to the post office was about a 35-40-minute trip to the post office. My point is, why would you want that if you could possibly avoid it? Stamps.com will help you avoid that. You can print out postage anywhere in the exact postage you need. Look, every dollar counts when you're running a small business. You're not going to throw away money. You shouldn't. If you are, then you're bad at business. But with Stamps.com, you get the benefits of a postage meter at a fraction of the cost. So right now, of course, there's a promo using the special offer, no risk trial, $110 bonus, including a digital scale and up to $55 in free postage. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Nerdist. That is Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. And now, this episode is Gerard Way, who turned out to be, like, the nicest guy in the world. He wanted to come on the podcast. Obviously, I'm sure you've heard of My Chemical Romance, but what you may or may not know about Gerard is that he's a huge comic book geek, and he's written comic books, one of them called The Umbrella Academy, and then most recently, which is available on Dark Horse now, The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys, and we had a blast hanging out with him. And if Twitter is to be believed, and the text messages, then very soon... Double Dubs, a.k.a. Will Wheaton, and Gerard and I are going to get together and play tabletop games. So I didn't know what to expect, but I really dig this guy. So here you go, the Nerdist Podcast number 394 with Gerard Way.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. We're here with musician and writer Gerard Way, here to talk about rock and roll. I say it's not here to stay.
I don't know why. I just felt like opening the show like an old news, like an old timey.
Should have kept it up the entire time. I didn't like the break so soon.
What?
I wanted you to keep going.
I'm Captain Bailout. That's why I'm bad at sketch comedy, Jonah. Because after two lines, Mike Furman and I always used to try to play as hard and firm. We would try to do characters, and then after 2 minutes, somebody would be like, it's us. Fuck it. I'm no good. No good. Gerard, thank you for being here. Is that too loud?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, but I found out how to adjust it.
Yep. Just that little mini pod right there.
Yeah, I'm tweaking it out.
You must have been Meltdown 1.5 million times.
Yeah, when I first moved to L.A. too, especially, because we moved to Mount Washington, and it was just awesome coming here, and just on tour and stuff too. Before I lived here, I would come here.
Yeah. And where are you from? Jersey?
New Jersey,
You're from New Jersey.
I'm from New Jersey, yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm. What's the comic book shop in New Jersey?
Comic Explosion.
Everyone knows it's Jay and Silent Bob Secret Stash. It's the only comic book store there.
I was too far from that, so I'm I basically lived near the airport, near the worst part of So that's where I grew up. So I would go to Comic Explosion in Nutley, which is still there. It's just in a different spot in Nutley now. It's awesome, but yeah, I never been to Kevin's shop. You know,
neither have I. I've driven past it. I was like, I had a couple hours in Jersey, and I drove by, the quick stop, the RST video. And
yeah.
Didn't stop at any of them.
But what?
Didn't have time. Had to go.
You sound like me, at a museum sometimes. Like, if I'm at a, I'm great in science museums. I'll stop, and I'll want to everything I want to look at and understand the history and Google. But art museums, I'm like, okay, I got it. Yeah. Like, just all the way through. I just burn through it as fast
I just go
as
in
possible.
Front of the museum and take a selfie.
Just so people think you're cultured.
Yeah. I'm like, totally loving this Urs Fischer exhibit. Whatever.
Okay, guys. Instagram video or Vines? I mean, on the one hand, Vines are 6 seconds. Instagrams are 15. But there is no Android equivalent to Vine, you guys. What's it going to be?
I think we're all alone.
Doesn't seem to be anyone alone. I don't know. I'm interested about this. Do you make Vines or do you do Instagram videos?
You know, I just discovered Vine. I think, I'm trying to remember. It was about a month ago or two. Month or two ago, and I was like, this is awesome. It's like super stupid, self-edited, good luck with it. You can't go fix it. I love it. So I haven't done enough of them yet, but I've been really busy, so
I like it. I like Vine better because of the looping. It kind of sometimes makes things funnier. The fact that something's so dumb, but you just keep on seeing it.
I get lost in them too. Yeah. Like I'll be watching even ones that I made, and I know the order they went in, and then I forget the order they're in.
Yeah. Wait, did I start there?
What is real life?
They got to fix the Vine app, though. I spent all day. I was running around. So I was performing in Salt Lake City a couple weeks ago. All day I would run around and I was getting different pieces of Salt Lake City to be like, Salt Lake City! And I got to the end of the day, I went to go the last shot and I opened the Vine app and it just was gone.
Yeah.
It just like...
What's the time limit on a Vine?
I don't know.
As far as saving it?
I couldn't... I think it's just whenever the app decides it doesn't want to save it anymore, you go back and you've lost... all of your time.
That's a bummer.
It is really a bummer. It's the worst thing that could happen to anyone, Gerard.
It's the worst thing. It's a serious problem.
It's the worst thing.
It's a serious problem.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got really upset for a second. But it's nice to have you on, and I know, obviously, a lot of people know you from Chemical Romance, mm-hmm. but a lot of nerd folk know you as an Eisner Award-winning comic book writer.
Yeah, which is super awesome to be known as that. That was such an honor. It was a huge deal.
Was it bigger? Is it more? I mean, for you, for music and comics, it's like, oh, the Eisner. Carry more weight in some senses?
Yeah, because it was such a childhood thing too. You know, it was a big deal. Yeah, I was sweating, and Sam Jackson was the award giver for that one, I think. Or he wasn't, was he the host?
And the motherfucking award.
Yeah, he was pretty much like that because we were really noisy at the Dark Horse section too. And I think he referred to us as you noisy motherfuckers over there. And that's how we found out we won.
Congratulations, motherfuckers.
Noisy motherfuckers. So that was a big deal. Yeah, in a lot of ways. Yeah, it's the biggest deal that ever could happen, like award wise.
So the broad strokes of what I understand about you is that you really wanted to be a comic book guy. Like that was your passion.
That was, yeah.
And then you sort of around 9/11, from what I read, if Wikipedia is to be believed, you were like, I think maybe I need to get out and see the world a little bit.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, like I went at 15, I got published, which was really rad. I went to like a Philadelphia Comic Con and showed a guy my stuff and got published. It was really cool. And
is that the stuff you have to pay for? Like you pay to like show like industry professionals?
No,
or?
I never saw any of that. I don't know.
I saw that,
did they do that?
I saw that in the that movie.
The Comic Con movie?
Yeah, the Comic Con movie.
Yeah,
like, pay to show?
Yeah, it's like you have to like pay to like show your stuff to professionals.
That's
and
so
they
lame.
Give you notes. Yeah, it seems kind of weird.
Super lame. Nah, you should. I always feel you should never pay to do anything as an artist. Like somebody should ask you to, and if not, you should wait in a line all day for free at least. You know?
Yeah,
I don't know if I mean I don't know what the I mean I don't know if that's fairly standard for the comic book industry. Mm-hmm. I assume that maybe it is, but it's like in performance, if someone says, "Oh, pay for these classes and we'll give you, you know, we'll put you in front of casting directors," right. And you're like, "No,
well, or, something about this smells wrong."
Yeah, yeah. Like like your dick is out and that smells wrong.
Yeah.
So you really should never, and now you don't have to, because you could just put your stuff up.
Yeah,
if you want
and
to,
if somebody loves it, that'll end up on some kind of cool blog like Super Punch or something. Like, you know, I go to that all the time and I just see cool art, and then people see it and they get jobs. You know, I was looking for artists that way for a while.
Yeah. So when you're writing a comic book versus when you're writing a song, does it feel like it comes from the same place, or is it separate?
It comes from the same place, kind of, but the execution is so different that it takes me. I did the math. It takes me 14 days, 6 full work days to write a comic.
Oh wow!
It takes me that long. Umbrella's so dense that it takes that long, and generally anything else I write, Killjoy's a little less, but. Generally, anything else I write like tends to take that long. So it's not as much as I love it, and I'm proud of the stuff I've done, and I feel like I'm good at it. Like it's not as automatic as music. Like music, I just kind of see a guitar, and like if it's a brand new instrument, I somehow know how to at least make noise with it, and then I'll end up writing a song with it. And it's a very different. And with
you're with people,
you know,
friends.
And yeah, with people, or even if like I am alone in like my office or my room or something, and. Like solitary is pretty fun too for writing, and then but it's just so different, and you feel really more closed off. I don't know, something, it's gonna sound like metaphysical or whatever, but when you're sitting with a guitar writing music, you feel more connected to, I guess, the universe than you do sitting there staring at a computer writing a comic book.
Right,
you're creating a universe then, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
I would say I don't even. I mean. Part of me staring at a computer feels, in theory, connected to the world. Like I like knowing that there's an internet connection, but. It is, but interfacing with the machine the way that we do is so isolating.
It is.
It's weird. Yeah. It's weirdly isolating that technology could make us more connected, but I think possibly more isolated than we've ever been in a weird sort of way.
Yeah, you get lost in it. Yeah, you can misinterpret stuff and take stuff the right way or the wrong way if it's meant to be nice or evil. Or I mean, there's just like so much weird shit that can happen to you on the internet.
That's why it's best to just try not to react to things. There's like someone says something, you're like, hey, what the fuck? And they're like, oh, I was kidding or I didn't mean it that way. And then you're like, I'm a dick. Mm. I'm obsessed with myself and I shouldn't be reading this stuff.
Yeah, I stopped Googling myself a long time ago.
That's probably it's wise. There's no nothing good comes of it.
Nothing good.
You you either go, hey, look at that, some guy thinks I'm awesome, or what the fuck did I do? Like, but either way, you're not enriched necessarily. Anyway,
I found some cool animated GIFs of myself. I found some pretty decent GIFs.
See, all right, I gotta be honest. I keep shit like that too. If I find super weird, funny GIFs.
Yeah.
Like, I keep them.
Yeah, same here. I have them all kind of filed away.
Or like memes. I collect memes.
What's your favorite meme?
I look on my phone. I collect them of my friends and my brother. I just collect memes. What is it? I started making my own as reactions to questions that I got tired of hearing over and over.
Yeah.
So instead of responding.
So you just see him and give him a little screen grab?
I just give him a little picture.
So here's what we're going to do. Top question that you respond to all the time, and then the meme that is
top
the response
question
to.
I respond to all the time.
But then you have to tell us what the meme is so that we can...
Okay. No, wait. This recently just happened, so I got to really remember. I got to dig hard in my brain. There was something that I had to use this... I used this... Well, let me tell you the meme first. I used this skateboard kid because I was so bored of this one question. And I was like, oh, that's funny, because it's like, I'm bored of this.
What was the question? Where does the name My Chemical Romance come from?
No, they're usually, like, that's fine. I'll just usually, you know,
good. Where's
ignore
the name
those.
My Chemical Romance?
I'll usually ignore those. But we're Skate Kid. I gotta show you. So I found out. So anyway, the story behind at least the meme is then I just found this kid who was skateboarding, and he looks really intense, and it looks like it's 80s too. So it's like a fucking Valterra or something. It's like a big hunk of wood, you know. And he's so intense. And then somebody's like, yo, that's Christian Hosoi or whatever. I don't know how to say his last name, but he's like a legendary skater.
Yeah, the Christ
and,
Air.
I just typed in, it wasn't something obvious either. I typed in something weird to find him, and I found it, and it was just it. You know, I'm having a hard time right now.
There's a good documentary on that guy's life called Rising Sun. It's on Netflix Instant Watch.
Oh,
it's about
it?
Skater Christian Hosoi, who was like one of the biggest skaters in the 80s and then got busted for meth.
And, so I found him. I got really excited. Then I found him on Twitter. I followed him, and his story's really inspiring. And I'm like, good for this dude. So
yeah. Now he's in Orange County as a youth minister, I believe.
Really,
one of my favorite things that he does actually is he tweets pictures of himself like thrashing or another dude totally thrashing with like a Bible quote. It's super intense.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Super powerful when you look at it.
And he's still doing like crazy stuff.
I made this blocking meme when I block somebody. It's two guys.
Two guys in a karate exercise.
One guy's blocking the other.
You've been blocked. God damn it. I love that.
That's great.
It's good. I can send it to you. And then we're Skate Kid. I know he's creeping around here.
Oh, you guys have the same case.
Oh, my God. Okay, so let's talk about this phone case real quick. This phone case, this is the only thing I've bought twice in my life. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Besides, like, maybe milk or eggs or something.
Okay.
You know? And, like, it is the most comfortable cell phone case
ever. I love it.
It's furry. Mine got scummed up, and I still kept it. I loved it.
Like, it's the Wookiee. It's the Chewbacca phone case. It's actual Wookiee fur, Jonah.
Actual Wookiee fur?
Yeah.
Where'd they get it?
From a Wookiee? Fucking dumb question.
Where'd they get that?
I got it from PowerA.com because I would like a shitload of free ones.
See, Chris?
Shit, I don't know how it works.
Snarky answers will get you nothing for free.
Yeah.
I didn't get this for free from a Wookiee, Jonah. I had to take it. Because that's how you get something from a Wookiee.
You had to shave the Wookiee's back?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just a little piece when he was asleep. He didn't know.
The C-3PO, but it didn't cut it. I was like, oh, I'll have two. One for when I'm feeling blingy or something, and one when I'm just like a Wookiee. And the C-3PO lasted like 20 minutes.
There seems to be a rectangular space missing in my back.
It was, all right, we're not going to find this thing.
We're not going to find the meme.
I found him, but I didn't find him saying anything super funny. Because he usually, Oh, yeah. Okay, so it started like this. He's just skating, right?
Yep, there he is.
I sent that to somebody, and then I went bored of this. And I laugh at myself a lot. And then it went to a sigh with the same question. This is all the same question. And then eventually it just ended up, fuck.
There's perfect.
And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
It just keeps getting bigger.
Where is the Gerard Way meme generator? Is that on?
I use this crappy one. I don't know what it's called. I know. I don't know. Is there a meme? There's got to be a meme generator for everybody out there.
I would imagine there is.
Yeah, Photoshop.
I've really gotten into shitty bootleg Photoshop lately, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that's kind of an old thing, but it's fun if you aim for really good instead of just, like, cat heads on people. But if you're trying to do it really good and you're not that good at it, it starts to look fucking rad because it's so bad. You know, if you're just like...
Are you not a Photoshop guy?
I never learned it. All right, so I went to SVA, back to the comics. I went to art school, but it was before the big shift of digital.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, hey, we have these computers. You might want to check them out because we think they're the future. And I was like, fuck that. I'm going to...
Never happened.
Yeah, I'm going to do my lettering by hand. I had the little... thing. So I learned everything super analog style.
Which is probably a good way to learn
it. Absolutely, yeah, for sure. And had really awesome teachers like Carmen Infantino, Sal Amendola, Joe Orlando, all these legends, you know. Joey Cavalieri, who's still at DC. And then I interned there. Joey Cavalieri got me an internship and stuff like that. So my point, though, is I never learned Photoshop because right away I was like kind of a curmudgeon about it. I was like, no, fuck, that's not real comics. You got to do it by hand. And
I like this an adorable kid curmudgeon. Mm-hmm. No, computers are dumb.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. And then I got out and could get a job because I didn't have Photoshop skills.
It says here on your resume that computers are dumb.
You still feel that way.
Would you like to elaborate on that? I think it speaks for itself.
Yeah. You're dumb for asking that.
Oh, why? No one's turned the
Where's my desk? Where's my desk?
I like your moxie. You're hired.
Fuck no, I'm fired.
Oh, shit. Please come back.
You can't hire me. I quit.
That's awesome. Nobody's ever said that. I think you've just stumbled into something nobody's ever said.
I'll put it in my locket.
Yeah, you should.
Put it in your comedy locket.
You can't hire me. I quit. I bet you should. I Google that shit sometimes if I feel like I've stepped into something that's never been said.
And then you check it out.
I check it out.
And most times.
And I'm like, yes.
Really?
Yeah, most times it works out.
I forget to. I just send it off into the zeitgeist and hope it comes back. If it loves me, it will find its way back.
You'll see it on a sitcom and it'll bug
it'll come back on a t-shirt.
Yeah,
Jonah said a few jokes that we know originated with him that turned up on things. That we know, like, oh,
I do it for the art.
Why are you shaking? So, I mean, right. Just this transition from comic book to, I mean, it's sort of like, are people friendly about it to you? Because I remember, like, when my friend Rob Zombie started directing movies, people were like, what does this rock star do with thinking direct movies? Like, no, you understand. This has always been my passion. Music was just this thing that I could do.
Yeah, exactly.
But this was the thing. This was actually the thing that defines me.
Right. It's the same way. So, like, you know, I literally was like, I mean, music was always this, like, kind of the secret passion thing, you know? And then I would kind of keep it to myself. And then, you know, when I had, like, the life crisis, I was like, all right, I'm going to go do this. I'm gonna try this band thing. Because the comic thing actually wasn't working out. It was, like, the worst period in comics to get out of school and try to draw them. It was after the 90s boom.
Oh, okay.
So it was, like, all the people that had bought, like, those bag Death of Supermans that thought they were going to be worth lots of money and got pissed off. So, yeah, there's a huge crash. Like, remember they were, like, fucking hiring anybody. It didn't matter how you drew. It was just... So then I go to school because I'm like, cool, I'll get a job. And then, you know, anyway. So then what happened? Well, I got lost.
You started a band.
Oh, yeah, I started a band because I was like, this will be a good backup. A rock band. Compared to, like, breaking into comics, that was my fucking backup.
Plan B for band.
Plan B. I'll start this band. And it was an immediate thing.
Was it sort of like, did you live the... that special montage moment that I've always wanted to have where it's like, we're playing in our garage. Next thing, hey, guys, it's on the radio. And then you see the montage of it climbing up the charts. Number 12, number 6, number 2.
If you swap some of those things out for, like, basement and college radio.
Okay.
I remember being in the parking lot of our shithole studio and hearing it on college radio for the first time, WSOU Pirate Radio, Seton Hall. It was amazing. It was like, that was the most, it never got better than that. Like, even hearing it on commercial radio wasn't as cool.
Was the album for that already out, or was it like a 7-inch, or what
was it?
It was
a song.
It was just a song.
It only existed digitally, too. It wasn't even a 7-inch, because that's how poor we were. We just had a digital file we sent over.
Sent it to the station.
Yeah, because we had started to play local, and one of the DJs really liked us, and he said, do you have anything? And we said, well, we'll go record something. So we recorded one song called Vampires Will Never Hurt You. And then it just started to build up inch by inch, though, you know, momentum. And it was like, so I quit my job, which was actually a rad job. I was designing toys at the time. I was doing, like, this stuff for Toy Biz.
What a fanciful life you've had.
Yeah, I know.
You know, comics aren't working. I'll design toys. I'll be a rock star for a while.
Yeah.
That's like Kate Micucci from Garfunkel & Oates. She was, like, going to get hired to, like, design toys. And then they're like, it's like, oh, but you should be an actor. She's like, okay.
Yeah, it was kind of like that, yeah. So then I was working at this toy design place, and then we got this. We were literally just playing a basement the week before, and we got this offer to open up for Jimmy Eat World at the Allentown Fairground. It was like 10,000 something people,
and that's right when Bleed American came out.
Yes,
right? Oh, they were like, the self-titled album.
They were like, "What? It's not Bleed American?"
After 9/11, they took it off the shelves and then made it the self-titled album.
That's right.
And actually, it came out three times because it was on Grand Royal, but then Grand Royal went out of business. That was the Beastie Boys label. And then they re-released it, and then they had to, after 9/11, they took it back off the shelves and re-released it.
Wow.
Because Bleed American was too much for people. There was a bunch of albums that got pulled off the shelves after 9/11.
New York City Cops got pulled off the Strokes album, I remember that.
That was another album. They took it off because the cover,
the
black hand.
On,
it was basically Smell the Glove is what it was.
Yeah, it was Smell the Glove.
And,
Smell the Glove. I love that original cover. That the one after... You know, it wasn't as cool.
It was whatever.
It was just whatever. Maybe that was their point. Whatever.
Just kind of like, oh, fuck you, here
just
you
some
go.
Some blobs.
Yeah. And then there was like I Am the World Trade Center. Their album had just come out, and then they got pulled off. There was a bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah. There was a rap album with the World Trade blowing up on it, right?
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah. Like Week of, too, or something.
Yeah.
Speed Kills by Bush. Is that the name of that band, Bush?
I think so.
I literally,
Slayer,
yeah,
God
like
Hates
the
Assault
Bush.
Came out.
As it was functioning in my brain, I was like, that couldn't possibly be the name of a fucking band.
Gavin Rossdale Bush?
Yeah, that's what I did mean. But I was like, not Rush. Bush? Is there a band called fucking Bush?
Remember Bush was like, because I worked at K-Rock from 95 to 98. And that was like, I just rode that wave. It was like, it was the last breaths of grunt. It was like, it was grunt. I'll tell you, K-Rock 95, 96 was, it was Candlebox. It was Alanis.
Candlebox,
It was Candlebox, Alanis. It was
Collective Soul.
Collective Soul. A lot of Collective Soul. Stone Temple Pilots. Just sort of.
Silverchair, right?
Silverchair. Yeah. Just coming into kind of like Pearl Jam live stuff, you know?
They started releasing.
They started doing that stuff. And then,
And then everyone started rapping.
And then everyone started shitty rapping.
Oh, yeah. New metal.
Yeah.
Oh,
is that what that was called?
Yeah, they called it
NU. NU.
It had a name.
Dash metal.
NU, yeah, it was NU.
New metal.
New.
There was even a time, I think, in like early or mid 2000s where they tried to, like, a bunch of bands were coming out. They were like, oh, it's new grunge. And everyone was like,
No,
we're not going to do that again, yeah.
That was never going to work. I remember when they kept talking about that, too, because it was like, but we have all these really great Nirvana albums. Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
I don't know how to categorize music anymore. Like, if maybe it's hard because we're in the time period right now, but if I were to think about, the music of the early 2010s, like, I don't know what I would.
No.
I can't.
Oh, the music of the early 2010s is like, you know, fucking suspenders, bow ties, tucked in shirts.
Coal Mine.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the Lumineers, Mumford and Sons, all those bands. It's all kind of acoustic. It's all like, you know, everyone got really into the Decemberists, and then now they're bands. So it's like whatever that would be called.
So put down your weapons and get in my face.
Yeah. So we'll call it new folk.
New folk.
We'll call it new folk.
I'll call it growl. For a while,
a lot of yelling, a lot of shouting.
My friend calls it hey ho.
Yeah, a lot of that because it's a lot of.
There's a lot of hey and hoes.
A lot of far away from the microphone.
Yeah, it's a lot of that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You know, it's too bad there weren't more Jack Johnson knockoffs because I was calling that Jazzmatazz and I really wanted that to catch on. I really want that to catch on.
Jazzmatazz.
For a while it was frontier. I was at frontier rock where it was like Midlake and Decemberists and it was like it was all these like you know.
Oh, my brother called it Sweet Haven rock because it was like the people in fucking the Popeye movie. When you would look at, and we liked all those bands too, but we had to call them something. We're like, these motherfuckers look like they're from Sweet Haven.
Sweet Haven. Oh, that's such a
I'm not one to talk.
Reference.
I look like, you know, I don't know, the fucking vampire or whatever. But
yeah, but that was like the theatrics of your band.
Yeah, I was just ripping off Dave Vanian, but. You know, so yeah, I'm not one. So that's why I can make fun of people dressing like Sweet Haven because I had this. I predicted the whole thing too. After like Parade, I think somebody had asked, like, what are you going to do next? I was like, I think I want to start dressing like fucking chimney sweeps because I think that's
exactly
coming.
It.
And then, no shit, like a year and a half later, it was fucking chimney sweeps.
Yeah,
everywhere.
A lot of whistling, a lot of
fingerless gloves.
Hello.
Yeah, a lot of fingerless gloves, all fingerless gloves and little hats.
Yeah.
And vests.
And then your next album, like, the soot is in the chimney.
Yeah.
Hey!
Hey. Oh. When you look back now, like, when you see, because you guys really were, the sort of cultural movement. When you look back, are you like, do you go, hey, look what we were wearing? Or do you think of it fondly? Or do you think of it like, we were kids? Like, how do you perceive it?
All of it. I'm able to laugh at it. I'm able to be like, holy shit, I can't believe I wore that day. Only occasionally, though. But it's super fun. Yeah, I'm really proud of it. I'm just like, we wore some crazy shit. Like, you know, I look at, especially by the time we'd gotten a Parade, and I was, it was just funny. It was funny to me.
Were you into that stuff, like the bands you listened to before that? Were you into, like, the bands that were all about theatrics and stuff like that?
Yeah, I was. Actually, it's funny, though. Before I started My Chem, and in college especially, I was listening to Supergrass, Blur. Britpop was really big for me, and that wasn't very theatrical. The performers
were. No, it's actually really
were.
Toned down.
Yeah, it's toned down. You had guys like Jarvis that were very, they'd move very theatrically. But I don't know. I guess I felt like it was missing from what I wanted to see, too.
Yeah.
So I wasn't actually like that at all. Like, I didn't wear black. I didn't. And then I just was kind of like, it feels like the universe needs this or something. It was a weird thing.
Well, that is a weird thing too when you see a band that like it's like I'm fine if the music's really good and like they're just dressed like whatever. I like, mm-hmm. oh, they, you know, they needn't have bothered. It's fine.
Yeah.
But it's like every once in a while when I'll go and look at it, like a Blur video, and I was like, oh, some of those guys in the band look like they're just like football and jocks.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, they're wearing fucking like Adidas gear zipped up all the way.
You want to identify with them a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
I miss some of that. I think there was a logic behind that. But I guess my camera was a response to a lot of things. And one of them was, the Britpop stuff aside, because they did have a sophistication and a class to what they were doing. They were very stylish, even if they were dressed down. But then what came kind of after that, and I guess that, like, new metal era, but even, like, the post-grunge or whatever the heck it was, the bad grunge at the end.
Yeah.
Like, it had gotten so t-shirt and jeans that it was just like, you know, I guess My Chem was such a response to all that. And then it was a response to that, and then also, I guess, you know, the homophobia and kind of that super macho-ness of nu metal was a response. It was a response to a lot of things, you know?
Yeah.
That is kind of
testing the audiences.
Totally. Yeah.
It is sort of fun to, I mean, I would love to just sort of track the waves of, like, you know, 50s rock, clean cut, 60s, now they're getting a little shaggy, 70s,
yeah,
now
great.
They're fucking...
Disgusting.
And then the 80s, oh, everyone's shaved, and everyone, yep. oh, yeah. and then it's glam rock, oh, everyone's shaggy, oh, grunge, they yeah. lost all the glitz.
Grant
oh.
Morrison has an entire theory on, he's able to track it by 11 years, a period, and then it involves, like, the spots on the sun. And he literally will break it down for you. As, like, basically you have punk and hippie, and he starts all the way back from Elvis.
Wow.
And it's always dead on, you know? Like, grunge was actually, like, psychedelic, and I never thought of it that way. I always thought it was punk, and he's like, no.
Well, you have to be very careful, because his accent is hypnotic, and so anything he says, you're going to agree with, no matter what.
I guess because I'm, like, half Scottish, I've never had trouble with it. I've always been able to sync right in with it.
No, I can understand it.
Yeah.
It's just fucking awesome. It sounds
you're
way
right,
better than
right.
our. It's very like it's a little whispery
mm-hmm.
and very powerful. Like it
deep.
Just it just
deep.
It is
powerful
just sort
voice.
Of pulls you in.
Everything he's saying makes sense and is super serious when he's saying it. Yeah, you're right.
See, my idea of
his voice always sounds like he's right up on a mic.
He's right up. My idea of being powerful is like, I have to get louder. Like, it's the wrong,
yeah.
it's the wrong. But then, you know, guys like Neil Gaiman and Grant, it's like, they're very soft-spoken.
Yeah,
and then just fucking command a room.
I know.
Well, they force you to listen. They force everyone else to quiet down so they hear what this calm guy is saying. this guy
true.
Knows what's going on. I'm going to listen to him.
That's a question is you know, if you're a guy who's essentially in this isolated artistic endeavor of making comic books or mm-hmm. even beginning to make toys, and then all of a sudden, like, you're performing for 10,000 people, mm-hmm. Does that feel very natural to you, or did you have to sort of learn how to play into that?
It felt supernatural, and I can't explain why. It was an automatic thing, like, from the first show. I mean, that wasn't, like, great the first show, but I felt like I could get really good at it, you know? Like, I was like, oh, I could be good at this.
Oh, that's where you were before. You were saying you were about to, you were opening,
yeah.
you opened for Jimmy.
Yeah,
well, this
for
10,000 people.
That was scary, though. I mean, it was like a little, what is it, like a stadium, but a half, you know, what do they call that shit?
It's amphitheater?
Like amphitheater. It's yeah. outside, and the sun's still out, and you're just like, all right, I guess we're going to do this. And it was crazy.
Did you guys dress up crazy from the get-go?
You know, in the beginning, everybody was just kind of their own thing. Mikey always had, like, a little bit of a Britpop thing going on. And, you know, originally I was generally the only one wearing black. Like, I was kind of almost in a very damn Davey-y way. I was
yeah.
intentionally going for that. Like, I thought it was cool that we were so different. And then later on it made sense to match. But in the beginning, like, I was kind of doing the vampire thing, and then... everybody else just kind of wore t-shirts or whatever the hell they wanted. And then eventually you start to feel like a gang, so then you start to dress like a gang. And that's really what happened, you know? So
it's almost like you're, in a way, it's the male version of syncing periods in a weird sort of way. You all yeah. sort of get on the same
oh,
sort
man.
Of.
Oh, man,
well,
yeah.
You're hanging out so much and you get into the same kind of
you
thing.
Get in the same sort yeah. of things. And, like, I notice when I'm not around my closest friends and I'm talking to other people, I'll notice affectations and things that I know I picked up from them.
Yeah. yeah.
That I didn't, you know, that I just never occurred
to
me.
Oh, yeah, being in a band is all about synced periods.
Yeah.
It really is.
That's why sometimes it's hard to, like, even, like if you, like, go and hang out with a band that's been on tour for
oh,
a bit.
Yeah.
And then they're all just, they all, like, it's like, yeah. And then they all start laughing because of a thing that happened in the van
yeah.
once.
Yeah, because it's the only
a
way
year ago.
Things.
Yeah,
yeah
exactly.
a year ago. Oh, we were like, yeah, you just end up with weird shit. Like, like a fucking rotten salami or something. Like, just yeah. weird. Just like somebody would give you something and then it would be in the van and you'd give it a name, like, and then you make fun of it and then you fucking throw it out on the highway at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And then that had a name. And yeah.
So how much of a relationship do you, as a band with your audience,
mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously you're sort of growing together. There is sort of like this symbiotic evolution mm-hmm. of... We play this music, all right, well, these people are responding to this music, so maybe do you respond more to them, and then they respond more, and then you respond more? Is it like, do you feel the relationship like that, or is it just like, we're doing this no matter what, and you can come along for the ride or not?
It's always been that. It's always been, this is what we're doing, you know? I guess the intent was cool to see the response and respond to. So, like, intent meaning... Let's try to fight the good fight or do some good work out of this. Or even if it's just leaving with somebody with a good attitude or a good sentiment. It's not about having food drives per se. It's just about changing attitudes. When we would get up there, especially, I remember right before we had played this Taste of Chaos tour, it was a pretty big tour. And I noticed, you know, nobody was really, there was all these kids coming to shows and they wanted to believe in something and they wanted a little bit of, not so much direction, but maybe inspiration or just something. And nobody was giving it to them, you know? And I kind of felt like, well, we're up here for 40 minutes. We should do something positive in between the songs. So without trying to talk too much during the set, which sometimes I failed at, you know, I kind of did that, you know? It was cool. It worked out.
And so do you feel like it was... You're trying to give them more of an ideology other than, oh, here's some songs that you
absolutely.
Might like.
Oh, man, it was very much like that. I was pretty aggro about it, too. Like, fucking do something. I remember saying shit like that. Like, I think I would say stuff like, you motherfuckers need to activate or something. Like, you need to make,
I don't know what that means, but I want
to
do it.
Yeah, just activate, you know. Like, I would try to just empower people, basically, and use the time wisely, you know. It was great. It was a good time.
That was, I think, a really good thing that I liked about when I was getting into, like, you know, like, real positive, straight-edge hardcore stuff.
Positive
like,
core.
Yeah, but, like, you'd hear, like, you know, live stuff, and they're, like, the guys would be yelling, like, start a scene, start uh-huh. a zine, like, you know, make uh-huh. a band. Like, it's like, you know, you have the opportunity now, you have the time, you have the ability, just go and do it. Like, it really is. It does mean a lot to a young kid.
Yeah.
When a band, like, that you like is just saying, you can do it, too.
Right. Especially, like, they mean it, you know, and... You know, I'm, you know, a lot of those posi-core bands too, like maybe, you know, they were all full of idealists and I was the same way. And eventually if you let it happen to you, idealists always get burned, you know,
yeah.
And I definitely went into Parade as an extreme idealist at that point, especially after Revenge, seeing the kind of power we could either abuse or use for good or wield and stuff. And, you know, I felt a little, there was so many misconceptions about Black Parade and, you know, some of it wasn't crushing per se, but it was definitely, it gave me perspective in reality about the world.
What do you mean that idealists get burned?
I think, well, maybe burned is the wrong word. I think you're as an idealist, you're eventually faced with a challenge, and the challenge is, you know, you could be an idealist and hope all this stuff is really going to work out, but eventually if you... It's almost like if you believe too strongly in a negative way, like, it's going to let you down. If you believe in anything too strongly, eventually it will let you down. Like, your parents will let you down. You know, fucking Luke Skywalker. Actually, Luke Skywalker never let you down.
He's not going to let you down.
Almost did, though.
Yeah, but he didn't. His dad didn't let him down either.
Yeah.
He got saved. Yeah, even at the end, he pulled it together.
He did pull it together. Yeah. See, we don't, as comedians, we don't really have the opportunity, like, in the middle of a set and be like, and then that's when I wore my dick like a watch. Yeah. You can really get out there and help your community. You can really do something.
Was. Don Rickles does it. It's all about love.
It's all about love. Look at these Jews. Don, please.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was a bit of that, though. Like, I would be like, you know, go out and do something positive. All right, this song's about getting fucked in jail. I was all of the time, you know?
See, because if you don't do something positive, you could end up in jail.
Say all days.
It all sort of weaves.
It connects, yeah.
It all sort of weaves together in some way. But it is pretty, you know, it's pretty staggering just being a YouTuber as I am, mm-hmm. and then you sort of, then you look at My Chemical Romance video views. I'm laughing because it's so fucking funny. It's like 65 million.
It's crazy.
50 million. I mean.
And there was a gap for a while because there was like that weird, you know, pissing match between record companies and a lot of them. I'm not just thinking.
Oh, yeah, they were pulling down.
Between YouTube, yeah. And so there was, like, it's still, like, crazy. Like, every time you just use my Apple TV to see teenagers pop up, because it's still, like, the most viewed, or it's close, you know, whatever.
It's,
I don't know. If
it's pretty insane, though. I mean, like, it's hard to get a million people mm-hmm. to watch one thing.
Mm-hmm.
65 million people is a staggering amount. It's like 20% of the population of this country.
Yeah, a lot of that, though, is a testament to kids not buying music necessarily as right. much as they are just going to YouTube to listen to right. the song they like over and over again.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that's a lot of repeat stuff that you don't necessarily
it's
find.
Still
in a lot.
Does it? You guys really grew with the digital revolution. I mean, you have about the same lifespan as, like, broadband.
Yeah, we it was kind of crazy. No, we actually had to do a Nightline interview once or something, or Dateline. I can't remember which one. They're, like, the same thing, I guess. But
one of the lines.
One of the lines.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because of that, they were, like, so we were literally, like, we're prime example and literally the first band to give away stuff because we couldn't pay to press, like, we're on a very small label, so it was just like, just take it, we don't care, trade it. And we generally felt that way for a long time.
Did that change?
Not really much. We always felt like if you like something, you should support it, because eventually, like, well, because it got to a point where I was like building fucking muscle cars and ray guns and shit. Like, it was getting, like, Black Parade wasn't cheap, so, it wasn't free. My ideas, they started to get so expensive
right.
and ambitious that then that's when, like, you would feel the sting of that, where it was just like, I know, but guys, like, we know, you know, we'd like to share our art, but this, you know, this uniform, like, Colleen Atwood made this. Like,
this is really, like, expensive.
It's really expensive, you know?
Come on, guys.
And then we went out and did the tour of it. And again, like, we were warned, like, you guys are probably going to break even. We're like, we don't give a fuck. And we had, like, Zeppelins and
Jesus.
Spark showers, and, you know? And so then at that point, I think it was just like, come on, guys, like, buy the record or something. Like, you're all here.
We'll put a big show together for you.
Like, I mean, you did buy a ticket, so I guess that works out. Yeah. But
buy a T-shirt.
But yeah, buy something.
It is.
Record label's getting mad at us. You guys,
yeah.
That record actually, despite the climate, like, that record did really well. And then, I think you should support art. Just because it's easy to steal. Like, it's not easy to go steal a piece of art in a fucking museum, so then that's wrong. It's just as wrong to steal art, you know?
Yeah. I like the idea of, like, you're the cool teacher for a while, and then yeah. you start to realize, and you're like, guys, it is not cheap to get a chimp to parachute
right,
from the
right.
outer atmosphere.
Right.
You all loved it, so come on!
Because at first it was like, I got these pants at Lady Gap, and I did my makeup in a truck stop. To be here for you this week, it cost $30. And then that outfit lasted an entire tour, unwashed. So it wasn't even like I spent $30 a day to be on stage. It wasn't $30 to live for 7 months in the same clothes.
Right.
And then, and then after a while, yeah, it got, socks got expensive.
Does it?
We don't do socks every night.
These gold socks keep on losing their fucking luster.
The socks, they're dry cleaning.
So in a sense, is success a bad thing, or is it just part of the evolution? It's like, well, you kind of got to go through this, and in some ways you'll burn out, but it's
yeah,
sort of like, that's
totally
just
agree
the
with
it
that.
Is,
I think it's a great way to look at it. I think it happens or it doesn't, and it's also, it's like driving a car. It's a killer. It can kill you, but it could be awesome. Like, it could also run out of gas. So,
you never know.
You never know.
Because you guys are officially not a band.
Yeah, yeah. We
anymore.
Broke up. I think it's been like 3 months. Yeah. Yeah.
In a good way? Like, oh, we should all just move on? Or
absolutely.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, it doesn't mean it wasn't painful, and it doesn't mean, we all do care about each other. It was nothing dramatic. It was time, even if it was maybe differing of opinions on when that time should be or anything. I mean, that's, but it, we still stay in touch, and
okay.
we like each other as we're excited to see what each other do. I'm really excited about that, just to see what people do.
Worst headline that you saw, worst punny headline that you saw, I'm going to guess My Chemical Breakup.
Oh, that was, yeah, because that might have been the worst one, because it was almost like, oh, I get it, but that's not even that. Yeah, it's like, I get it, but it's not that good. You gotta reach higher.
No one, no one's Chemical Romance.
Yeah, hey. Romance is over. For my Chemical Romance, that was
the honeymoon period.
It was all really awesome shit to read. I gotta be honest. Like, it was all really cool. Like, I don't know. Like, I guess I didn't really realize what kind of cultural impact we had had. You know, that had nothing to do with calling it a day either. But to get all that feedback and be like, wow, people really liked what we did, and they feel like something's missing, you know.
At the show, me and my friend do here on Wednesdays, there was like a right when you guys broke up, I think it was like the day I heard, there was a girl in the front row wearing a My Chemical Romance shirt, and I was like, "Did you hear?" And then she started to well up, and I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry." It's a comedy show, comedy show, comedy show.
Don't wear the shirt if you don't want me to ask you about it. Yeah. In her face,
yeah, idiot. It's your fault. You made me do this.
You probably made them break up.
Yeah.
You caused them to break up. Like, you just see her throw up her own heart. There's a whole group of people who also grew up with you.
Yeah.
You know,
did.
Like, they all, you were all sort of like, there's a little bit of Little Rascals kind of thing.
For
like,
sure.
you all kind of grew up together.
And I feel like every time the band succeeded or failed at something, so did they. And I think that's awesome, you know. And that's why, you know, it was such a blow for them, you know. I think it would have been, I don't know, I guess the way I feel about a lot of stuff like that, band breakups, is, you know, I think it preserves the idea to call it when it's time. You know, you keep doing it and eventually, I don't know, do something that's not genuine.
Well, there's a certain amount of luck or astrology or something. Like, you know, a band can release an amazing album,
mm-hmm.
and then everyone's like, this is the fucking greatest band in the world. And then their next album can be identical, and then people go, oh, they didn't grow at all.
Right.
Or people can go,
more great stuff.
Or they can experiment. And then people are like, what are you fucking doing?
Right.
You know, so you really, there is this sort of weird, I guess, accidental relationship that you have to have where you're in phase somehow, where your waves are in phase with people however you grow or turn.
Absolutely.
And I don't know how that's, I don't know what the secret, I mean, no one knows the secret to that.
Yeah, there's no way to predict it or...
Yeah, it's weird because like with bands I like, I mean, like the Weaker Thens have been pretty much putting out the same album every time they ever put, but like I love that album.
Yeah,
and I'll continue to buy it every time they put it out. And then you know, some people get upset, like the last Strokes album, everyone's like, more of the same, fuck this, I'm out, you know?
Yeah, it's a weird thing, you know? But yeah, there's these moments that can happen. I spoke to Grant a lot about it too, like especially Black Parade was like kind of right on this weird pulse at the moment, and it's like, you know, there is an astrology involved. It's like kind of right time, right place, right sentiment, like, and it's kind of what, you know, you end up expressing hopefully what a lot of people just needed to express at that moment. And that's great music, bad music, new metal, any kind of music. Like, you know, when new metal got huge, like, people needed that for some reason, you know.
They needed to break stuff.
And so they broke a lot of shit.
What if we just didn't tune the bass? It eventually leads to that. All new metal leads to manamana.
It really does.
What is inside my manamana? Well, that's like, you know, it's like, I always love going back and looking at those moments in time that were accidental, like just, you know, reading about when OK Computer came out. It was like, oh, it was just right time, the right sentiment, digital age coming in. They sort of captured this weird kind of cultural ennui that people needed to, they just fucking happened to catch it.
Yeah, they caught it. They were on tour, and it always happens because of a band. And I, you know, it's funny too, because if you track, the Bends was their second album, so they toured a lot and people liked them, and so then they really saw the world. They made their first album, they're still a relatively small band, even though they had fucking massive hit Creep.
But that could have been it.
It could have been it. And then so Ben's was great, though. So then they're touring the world. And then you gain a perspective from doing that in your second album, I believe. And then, you know, they made OK Computer. Like, based off that, all the shit they went through just touring Ben's. And that's kind of like, you know, Black Parade was basically the result of touring years on revenge, and like then the worldview you see, and you're just like, oh, I get it now. I think, or at least I've really forged my worldview, and now I can put it out. And you know, sometimes you never hit that again, but the point is, you're not supposed to. Like, why do you want to keep doing that? You want to keep like having these cultural booms? It's not really. I don't think it's about that, because you can't plan them. So
yeah.
You know, why?
And you can't. You shouldn't chase it.
No way.
Because people know. People know if you're trying to chase it, because it's too intentional.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Then it's too pandering and intentional.
Yeah, t-shirts and sloganeering and, you know, trying to start movements and stuff, and yeah.
Which is really all anti the stuff that apparently they preach early on. Like I am always fascinated by the idea of, you know, of punk, of sort of like that sort of punk idea of like, yeah, man, I'm, you know, for lack of a better term, raging against the machine. And then all of a sudden you get to a certain point and it's like, well, you're kind of the machine now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
What are you still raging against? Like, do you fight that, or do you, or is it sort of like Krusty the Clown? Like, hey, have you seen the Canyon Arrow?
Yeah, yeah.
They packed a truck full of money up to my house.
I think you fight it. You know, again, like, I feel like we were even a response to that, because I, at a certain point, like, I would meet old punker dudes that really got it and loved it, you know? It was always, like, the trusty punks that didn't get it, that were just, you know.
That is a fucking great name for your next band.
Trusty punks?
The trusty punks.
Those are the ones that didn't get it. But I would meet guys in all these amazing 90s bands, Fat Records bands from when I was a kid, and they all loved it. Like, I remember Fat Mike coming to see us and being like, that was like seeing fucking Kiss when I was 15. It was awesome.
Oh, that's rad.
He's like, yeah, and I'm like, yeah. I was listening to No Effects on the Way Here. I'm a huge fan of him and the whole band, you know? So, you, and guys like him, obviously, they understand that you can be part of the problem, and they call it out a lot.
Yeah, yeah. A band like No Effects is like, you know, the guys, you know, they got, like, the label's got millions.
Yeah.
And, you know, he still figures out a way to make it work within the ideals, and, you know, it's a struggle, it seems, but it's, you know, it's possible.
Well, I think my guess is that as long as you have kind of an honest, authentic relationship to your audience,
mm-hmm.
they'll follow you if as long as they know you're not bullshitting them.
Yeah.
And I mm-hmm. think the second they feel like, nah, I don't know, then I think that's where you lose people. I don't, you know, I'm guessing.
No, you're 100% right. And
I just,
like,
don't know how to.
It's easy to, you can fall into these trappings too. You could end up in scenarios where you don't, and nobody really plans for this. Or maybe some people do because their goal was to get into a band and make millions of dollars. But let's say it wasn't. You could still end up in that scenario and, like, you know, well, this is my beautiful house or whatever. Yeah, like, you're in a talking head song at that point. You're just like, what the fuck happened? Like, why is this house so big? Where's my family?
Right,
you're like, I can't even see them. Like, why am I driving a fucking Porsche? Like, what's going on? Like, you know,
when Jaguars are far superior to cars.
Exactly. And having said that, I really like nice cars. And as the word Porsche came out of my mouth, I was like, Chris drives a Jag.
I don't. I mean,
I need to step down the preacho-meter a little bit, because I personally don't need to be driving a Porsche when basically it's a Beetle. And so I drive a Beetle.
There you go. Good save.
So anyway.
Yeah, but Chris is a real car nut. You should see him on the weekends with Jay Leno.
Just love to get under the hood.
I love it, man. Oh,
soup
man.
It up. Yeah.
Just have my wife talk to you about how many fucking cars I've been through. I have nowhere to talk. I could have had, yeah, I could, like, at this point, I'm like, I could have got a Lamborghini. I just got, like, 10 cars I didn't like. Yeah. Lost a lot of money
just
on them. I should have just got the fucking Ferrari to start with. Anyway.
I thought I would try out the snazzy car for a couple years, but honestly, I'll drive by like a Cube or something. I'm like, that's a cool car.
Oh, so you're
that's
like really me. Cool. You're like me. Yeah, that's what happens to me. I'll be like, and then I'll try to figure out in my brain how to get out of the one I'm in. Sometimes I try to bring ethics or morals into it. Just, it's like, oh no, I need to dial it down. I need to
starving children in the world. Yeah. What car would they want me?
Yeah. Mm. I remember being in Japan because everybody drives Cubes fucking everywhere, and I was like, that is a cool car.
It's cool. Yeah, it's a cool car. I'm wondering.
I'm the same way.
Is there anything? Do you feel like that everyone got what you were trying to say, or do you feel like that there was a piece of your band that you feel like, fuck, no one ever picked up on this one thing, that it was so personal that maybe they just didn't pick up on it? Do you feel like they got everything?
I think for the most part, especially like the fans that really did get it, they totally got it. I, you know, and then the people in in, I guess, music journalism, they really got it too, for the most part. Like, the ones that weren't trying to turn us into a suicide cult to sell papers or magazines. Like, all the sensationalism aside, like, they really did get, like, the grandeur, the art, the spectacle, like, the glamour, the death, the live fast, die young. They got all that. Like, you can read it all. It's really cool. And the kids got that too. And they also got that, yeah, like, we're here to do something important, but that doesn't mean we have to be super serious about it.
Well, does that then do, what sort of social responsibility do you feel if there is a message of like live fast, die young, and then right. some guy's like, I'm gonna fucking kill myself just like you would want, and you're like, right. no, you're, that's literally, don't, please.
Yeah,
like, how do you,
well, the point is you grow out of that real early, and then, you know, even when I felt that way, I didn't really preach that. It was in the music for sure, and definitely in the energy of the music was the, I was such a drug addict at one point. Like, I didn't think I was going to make it to 30. And then you make it there, and you're just like, whoa, I want to live. Yeah. I don't want to die.
Yeah, because when you're growing up, it's like, you know, time is just this bottomless pit that never ends.
Never ends.
And it doesn't. Yeah. And then you hit 30s, and you're like, I think I'm almost at the halfway point.
Yeah.
And you just sort of feel it on your chest.
Ever.
Hey guys, we're still raging, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they got, you know, they even got like some of the in it, you know, some of it's pretty buried or hidden, but they got that stuff too for the most part, I think. I mean, it was always just like, you know, be yourself really loud, you know, be good to each other. It was super simple. You know, occasionally there was stuff like, you know, very recently I've noticed people missed the point a lot of the stage persona, or, you know, you know, there's this attitude of basically like, okay, well, if you're on stage and you've, you know, make out with another dude from your band on stage to bum out a bunch of homophobes that are in the audience, which was always the goal. Like, yeah. You know, there's, you know, I understand fandoms are there to, you know, write fiction and explore stuff and have fun with it. But there comes a point where it's like, you do know that's not real. And like, you do know, it's not that anybody's faking it, because for that, you know, moment with its intent to bump somebody out, that's a real intent. Like, that's, you know, so there was a little bit of that I've noticed recently that got missed. It was almost, that was the only, but I don't even, again, I don't think these are people that are like hardcore fans or get the right thing out of the band anyway. Like, if you just basically are just like a cute boy band poster on the wall, like, you're not getting the right thing out of the band. So if you know, all you're into with the band was, you know, challenging homophobia, that stuff, but which you saw as something else, like something that was, it's basically, it's not designed to get you the fuck off. It's designed to it's designed to fucking bum somebody out, you know, and challenge stuff, which is a lot of what I thought our job was up there, was to challenge constantly ideas and, you know, things like that. So there was, you know, I mean, it started with the makeup. It started there. Like, yeah. I can assure you, like, there are many guys I ripped off and looked up to, like Dave Vanian and stuff, David Bowie, that had done it before and maybe probably done it better. But at that moment when we were a baby band, nobody was doing it. There was, you know, that, like I said, I had to get pants from Lady Gap because you couldn't get small jeans, black, you couldn't wear tight shirts. Like, they just didn't exist. You go into the Gap and just be like, fuck.
Those were all my skinny friends when I was in bands with. They would all shop at Lady Gap.
Really?
Yeah.
And I couldn't because I was like a fat kid. So I would just be like, I would wear like a big, like, Weird Al shirt.
Lady Gap.
Just, so I was like, I had to look different.
Old Navy girls section. And my buddies in Thursday, they were all wearing Diesel jeans, but women's.
Yeah,
because that was
too.
A thing. Because that cut didn't exist. You had to buy
was
women's
skinny jeans.
You
had to get. Yeah, it was all. Well, it's all my friends did that. Yeah. All the late '90s, early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it started with that stuff, and it was like there was nobody doing that. There was nobody putting on. I mean, I used to get pretty scared too, because I'd be in a truck stop in the Midwest, putting fucking makeup on, about to play a meth lab. You know, and just like, fuck, I'm gonna get killed tonight. There was definitely some nights where I thought I was gonna get killed.
We were on tour once, my band, like, and we were in Northern California, Yreka, something like that.
Oh, just, yeah,
like,
meth capital of California.
Just like, but like loggers too. Like, we went to a Black Bear diner. Like, we'd been driving all night, and we like stopped to go to a Black Bear diner, and we walked in, and I know for a fact that I didn't hear it, but like, I could have sworn like a record scratch.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you know, stop, because there was just all these burly bearded dudes in flannel, all of them like that are there before work, just turning at all of us who are just like these skinny, emaciated, long hair.
Ah, that's
like,
it. Yeah,
like wearing like polyester, like all of us in the band wore like these tight polyester shirts and just, you know, and it, like it was just like, oh, let's not eat here.
But I think if you're weird enough, they'll go, oh, it's a band. Like, you know, I feel like they don't want trouble.
Especially around
superstitious
people.
I don't know if like a band
people,
even like came into their head.
And they and then that's when you died.
There's a lot of that. Yeah.
You've been dead this whole time.
We didn't get service for like, we sat there for 20 minutes before anyone ever came.
That is the worst. I am so sorry. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine, Chris. But like to sit in an empty
20
restaurant.
20 minutes.
Hey, how's your chai lattes? Do you want to tell us about the times that they messed it up?
Jonah, this is a non-fat decaf latte. It's not a chai.
Yeah.
Because I don't like the way they make chais at the one on Pass Avenue.
We had a gig to make. We had a gig.
You were almost late.
Somebody not get a steak dinner.
It was breakfast. We had been driving all night.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
You would have fucking, you would have killed somebody.
I would not have killed.
To wait 20 minutes somewhere, you would go insane.
You make me out to be this monster because one time I was really tired and I got snippy because Ken's Artisan Bakery didn't have their delicious ham and cheese croissant, which is the best fucking croissant in the United States. And they didn't have
it.
That's a second
thing. It's in Portland.
That's a second thing that you just brought up.
What?
What do you mean? I was talking about the time you kind of went apeshit.
They forget about it.
You're my...
Sometimes I'm impatient. No, not the microphone. Please, don't ruin the microphone.
You're my best friend.
Listen, we're not perfect, and I say we so I don't feel like it's just me. You know how people do that thing where they include other people to try to so they don't feel like they're just in an island?
Listen, we're all under a lot of stress right now.
Everyone's trying to run this company.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
We got a lot of growing up to do.
Everyone needs that chai latte at 3 o'clock. Guys, not alone. I'm doing it for the kids. They want me to be sugared up and caffeinated with a delicious beverage.
What was up with Chris tonight? I don't think Jonah let him get that chai latte. I just
we're not in this together. When you look back at the 12 years that you guys were a band, do you feel like is there something now that you understand that you didn't understand then where you go, oh, I guess we were doing this thing that I didn't realize until in retrospect?
That's a great question.
Maybe it'll start to sink in over the, you know, the coming months and the years, and you'll start to, as you gain perspective, I just find that wisdom provides a retrospective clarity that you know, where you go, oh, I was really trying to express these ideas and I didn't realize it at the time that because it was just what you were making.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're not aware of it or conscious of it.
There's tons of that happening every day. You know, like, I started when I knew the band. Yeah, I started using my Twitter a lot. Like, a lot. Like, I think people that are friends with me have me on mute or don't follow me anymore. Because I found that when the band broke up, it was good for them, the ones that were upset at least, and it was good for me to sit and actually listen to this stuff. Because some of it I hadn't listened to since it was, like mastered. Like, because then I'm performing it every night. I don't sit around listening to records I make. I do up until the release, like, all day, every day when I'm working on them. But anyway, so then I would listen to this stuff, and it was really, like, so every day there's some kind of revelation, or I learned something by either something a kid had said, or listening to the music and going, like, I remember listening to Revenge, I was like, holy shit, I'm really pissed off. I don't remember what I was so mad about. But
at the time, that's just sort of what came out.
It was really,
that is kind of interesting, is this, the song is just being this weird sort of emotional horcrux that you've left somewhere, that at the time you look back and go, oh, I don't know why I really cared about that thing so much. I guess that's part of that. It's sort of, maybe part of it dies when it comes out of you.
Like, even the last song on Danger Days called Vampire Money, I was listening to it, and I was like, man, I was really mad about Twilight. Why was I so mad about this?
How many reasons do you want? How many reasons do you want?
Eventually, I was like, it's just not for me. I get it.
Yeah.
It's not designed for me.
That's like the thing, a huge thing about maturity and like entertainment. Just like, instead of getting angry about it, you just go, yeah, it's not for me.
It's not for me. This is clearly not fucking aimed at me.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's almost like, it's like you should almost feel ashamed of yourself for thinking everything should be aimed at you.
Yeah, yeah. And you should be ashamed of yourself for criticizing something that you know isn't for you.
Yeah.
Or going on online and being like, this thing sucks. Or like, why are you even talking about it?
Right. Right. Yeah. It was funny, too, though. Although I made a joke about being mad about Twilight, I actually wasn't. Like, I actually felt a lot of those lyrics in that song in particular are really sympathetic towards the people that act in those films. I would think about them a lot, and I was like, they must go through some gnarly shit. Because I only had a taste of what those two people probably go through, or three, because there's three that are really popular from them.
Yeah, there's Jacob, too. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. Sorry.
It's got fitting.
I had to watch a cut of I don't even remember which one it was.
It's like a buff.
I don't remember which one it was, but it was the one that it was like, you should do, and they didn't really give a shit who did it. The people that made it. They just wanted somebody to do it. It's not like they were banging down my door. Record labels were banging down their door. Like,
right.
It was an opposite thing. So they were never like calling me up like, when are you going to really give us a song from a movie? They didn't give a fuck who it was. They just want to put their movie out. You know,
right.
They want... I'm sure they're happy to have, like, fucking Muse do it, you know? It was an amazing band. So, anyway, I'm watching a cut, and they're in the tent. And I think she has hypothermia or something. The whole movie's just basically, like, blue balls for teenage girls. Like, it seriously is. You're just sitting there like, oh, fuck. One of these people are going to fuck,
right.
You know? Like, they better do it soon or somebody's going to die.
They never fuck.
They're going to die again.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I thought about the first Harry Potter. Wait.
Hey, hang on a second. Whoa, what the?
We got to take out that blue balls for teenage girls thing. Man, I'm going to get in so much trouble for saying
that. What are you talking about?
That's so offensive.
No, it's not.
Okay, whatever.
Offensive.
So anyway, they're in the fucking tent. They're in the tent, and she's got hypothermia, and then, because he's a vampire, he can't warm her up, so homeboy takes his shirt off, the werewolf. That's Jacob, right? Jacob takes his shirt off, and he just turns to Edward and says, well, I'm hotter than you anyway.
Jesus.
And I was like, that's so good. I was actually really psyched on that. I was like, wow, now they're actually making fun of the real-world reaction to this film. I thought it was kind of next level.
I still haven't seen a Twilight movie, because I just... When I see bad CG in a movie, it's hard for me to, like, when I see it in the trailer, and I go, I just get very unforgiving, like, you guys could have made this good. Mm-hmm. You could have made this look good.
There's a lot of other stuff that makes it not good.
And I know, but at least the CG could have been good. But then that's where I go, not for me.
Not for me.
Yeah.
Not for me. Yeah, with the maturity that we're talking about, yeah, that's exactly it. Like, I've hit a point now in my life where I'm like, not everything is for me.
Yeah.
Did you ever think, like, when you started writing comics again, like, when you're doing Umbrella Academy, did you think, like, I shouldn't put my name on it because I don't want people to have a preconceived idea before they even see it?
For sure, because, so literally, we had a lot of discussions at Dark Horse, because I felt really confident. I was really proud of it, let's put it that way. And I knew it was a real legit comic that I had gone through many drafts and really wrote scripts for. So I was very proud of that. And when we talked about, like, the band and the involvement, like, literally the only time the band name was mentioned was on the cover previews, when shop owners could read it and order and be like, well, maybe this will bring some kids in, you know? Other than that, I think it ran in the back page of one ad of something in a Dark Horse comic, and that was it. Never talked about, I mean, obviously ended up talking about it a lot, but never talked about it again, never pushed it that way, because I just wanted it to get a fair shake, and it did. I was really happy with the with the reaction, and to answer a question I think you asked a long time ago, I was worried, like you talked about the Rob Zombie thing, and I was definitely worried that I was going to get some of that backlash. And I guess, not backlash, but hesitation. That's not the right fucking word.
No, but people do have a tendency to go, no, you are in this box in my head.
Right.
How can you be in two boxes?
Sure. And that made sense. So I totally, it was like warranted, you know, like... How are they supposed to know that I went to SVA and interned at DC and drew comics and, you know, they don't know that stuff. So I get it. So then we were just very careful because of that. So at first there was like every review of Umbrella Academy issue one starts with, yeah, I didn't think I was going to like this because fill in the blank. It's the same paragraph. And then it goes into either they did like it or they didn't after that. So that was really cool. So then it did get a fair shake. It was really cool. And then we just ended up the reviews by the time it was issue three or whatever, they stopped mentioning the band. It was pretty cool.
That's great.
So it was
you
nice.
Proved them wrong, and then that was it.
Yeah, and luckily, I don't think there was too many of them that went into it with any ill will, like not wanting to like it per se. I didn't read too much of that stuff, you know.
Well, that's good. And then almost in a way, it's, you know, maybe people came in with that idea of, like, you know, not having any expectations.
Yeah.
And then they were able to be surprised.
That actually, I think expectation is a really powerful weapon that you can use in your arsenal as an artist. And that wasn't the first time I used it. So going into it, I was like, all right, a lot of people think this is going to suck. But I know it's pretty good because I worked really hard on it. And it is actually really good. So because of that, it'll have this weird boomerang elastic effect where then everybody will fucking love it, which kind of pretty much happened with it. Like, a lot of people love that book. It's like, you know, so, like, I don't think there's a week goes by where I don't end up talking about Umbrella Academy, you know? And a similar thing actually did happen with Parade. So when we did Revenge, everybody was like, yeah, this is like a fucking screamo makeup band, whatever. And I was like, aha. But what you don't know is, like, we're going to dress up like, you know, marching band dudes and get really super weird and blow shit up. And so it created again, and obviously the work was good that we did, the band did with that record, but it created this thing where the expectation, again, was so fucking low because all they expected was dudes in black hair, you know, screaming and crying and get this other thing, and people really liked it because of that, you know. So you could kind of always play with expectation, I think. You can't do it too much. If you think you're good at it, it's when you fail at it, you know.
Yes, we always talk about this on the show that, you know, the jokes that you write where you're like, this is gonna fucking slaughter.
Mm-hmm.
It almost never slaughters. Mm-hmm. Because it's too, I don't know. It just, yeah. I don't know if something slaughters too much in your own head, it's just too inside your own head.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, it just has too many of its own reference points in your own head that other people are not privy to, and then they just can't, it's just not relatable.
Not relatable, yeah.
Yeah.
It's easy to become not relatable. Too, it can happen.
I guess so, but then the downside is if you think in those terms, then it's not organic because you're trying to write too much for an audience.
Yeah, it's just a.
Yeah. It really is better to. I don't really have. I played golf when I was in high school because my grandfather was a golfer and I loved him and we bonded that way. When I grew up, we played golf a lot, and I would always find when I played golf a lot, I would get worse and worse and worse and worse because I was thinking more and more about every little mechanic of every little thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my backswing's got to be this. I got to turn my hips. I got to do this. Then I would go away for like 6 months and forget everything and come back and do great
because
I had forgotten to worry about every little micromanaged everything. And then it was just sort of back in the moment again.
Yeah, that works that way, yeah. Like, I was making comics before I went to school to make comics. When I got out of school for making comics, I wasn't making them anymore. Like, there's and I don't regret the art school training or anything. It definitely rounded me, and it was a fine art degree, too, so I got to learn a lot of cool shit as well. But, like, if you do it and you're good at it and you love it, why are you going to go to school for it? Just keep fucking doing it. And, you know, just get better at it. So, yeah, because at 15 I was making comics. So I should have just kept making them, got a shit job, kept making them. But, you know, that's fine. So that's kind of what happened with the music thing was I didn't get any training intentionally. Like, I kept it very pure and very naive. And because of that, it just was like, phew, you know, because I was good at it, I think it just went. So, and I didn't do the training thing. I met a lot of people with training and they're, you know, with like a hardcore training, and it's almost like too much. They have so much training that they know all the chess moves already, and you can't discover something. You know?
Do you think that are you looking to? Is something like Umbrella Academy going to be a movie, or have you done anything else?
Well, it got optioned like the weekend, even though it was right before it won the Eisner. It got optioned basically that weekend, pretty much like before the Eisners even happened. Like, there was so much buzz about it. It was optioned as a film by Universal, and I've had a pretty cool relationship with them. Like, I think it's a very challenging comic to make into a film because I really think when it comes down to it at the end of the day, it's kind of more of a study in storytelling than it is a story in a lot of ways. There is a story there for sure, but to me it's like I enjoyed playing with the mechanics and the conventions, and it was just like a weird study, I thought. So it makes for a difficult film. So
I heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but someone on Twitter said that that Lock and Key is back as a, like, someone's going to try to make it as a movie again, which I hope is the case. because I fucking love.
I haven't read Lock and Key. I read, so but good. I know, I've been dying to read it. That's Joe Hill, right?
That's Joe Hill, yeah.
I read his first book. I was very excited about it because, for two reasons, I love Stephen King and I love the fact he changed his name. That was awesome. I was like, oh, cool. He, like, gave himself a different name.
His own identity. He gave himself a...
And he didn't, you know... And again, he didn't capitalize. He didn't... You know, they didn't put his dad's name on anything. He just was like, fuck it. Like, you know, I'm going to put this out and see what happens. And that first book, you know, Heart-Shaped Box, is great. And then he just sent me his new one I got to read. But I haven't read his comic yet, you know. But that happens. Movies or comics are weird like that. Like, I mean, you're around shit tons of them, so especially the Comic Cons and stuff. So, like, it'll be a lot of heat on it, then the heat will go away, and then all of a sudden somebody will get a hair up their ass and be like, what is this comic that my kid gave me? I'm going to make this a movie. And then all over again, the cycle begins. And then,
yeah.
You know?
And then, personally, how you feel like you're doing? You feel good overall? Everything good?
I feel great. Seriously. Good. I'm doing fucking awesome. you know, it was a really crazy ride. I've really
You got through it?
I got through it. I feel like I survived, and I feel like that, you know, I did right by the people that believed in it. And that's like a really good feeling to wake up and look at yourself in the mirror and just feel fucking awesome.
Well, it's really important when, you know, I mean, you and I have had some of the same struggles, I think, but just in terms of you know, whenever someone like you sort of gets through substance stuff and you come out the other side, it's helpful to people to go, oh, I can be okay, you know, for people who think maybe they can't ever again.
Right.
When you're in it, it's sort of, you're like, you're just in it.
Yeah, the way that I kind of, all right, a lot of people end things badly, right? And basically in rock and roll is a crazy thing. There's a few ways out, but there's death. You know what I mean? Like, there's some dark ways out of that when you feel trapped. And there's suicide. There's death. There's drug overdose. There's drug addiction for life to sustain you, to keep you in a fog the rest of your life. There's so many ways. You could Eddie and the Cruisers that shit and just, like, fucking take off and disappear into the woods. There's so many things. But it's very rare that you'll see any group or people come and say, hey, you know what? I know that we could probably headline a giant festival next year, but we're going to stop now. Like, why wait till it stops meaning something? And nobody kind of says, like, I quit like that in a good way. Like, or I resign. I resign because this is, you know, I want to protect this for you and for myself, actually. Yeah.
The band did it.
What's that?
The band.
The band.
The band called The Band. They did, like, they had 10 years in, and then they decided to
they did
quits.
It?
And then they...
Oh, that's why I was so confused, because he kept saying... Yeah.
The band.
Yeah.
Bad SEO, by the way.
I know.
They're very tough to Google.
So they had a great run.
They had a great run. They decided they were going to call it quits, and they did this huge show that was turned into a movie called The Last Waltz.
Awesome.
Directed by Scorsese.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I didn't even see that.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a really good
really rare. It's a rare thing to see, and I think that's why the media response was so awesome to it. And why people, like, weird people that I thought didn't like us were coming out of the woodworks. Or, like, people that would normally be like, oh, that guy would have shoved me in a locker. Like, I'm really bummed they're gone. Those makeup-wearing dudes, I'm kind of bummed.
Was that a weird thing to, like, you know, I've read interviews with Fat Mike and, you know, like, a lot of guys that just are these bands that, you know, an audience will come that they don't necessarily would never get along with.
Mm-hmm.
And would that always, like, I mean, that was, like, kind of why you did the making out with band members on stage, was to kind of, like, fuck with them. But I think we even talked to...
That's also why we stopped, too, I like to point out at a certain point. Not that it was never a planned thing.
Yeah.
But then it was off limits. Once we started to notice people were getting kind of amped on it.
Yeah.
That's always when we would stop something anyway.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you like this?
Yeah.
Oh, let me light this on fire, then.
Fuck you, this sucks.
Yeah. But you can track the minute where we stop.
Yeah, but like Rage Against the Machine, you know, talked about, Tom Morello, like, also said the same thing, where it's like, you know, they started just as a band, and like, they played a house party in Huntington Beach, like, with some other Revelation Record guys, and like, but then the people that started coming to their shows were a completely different mindset.
That happened at the drive-in too, I remember.
Yeah, big time with them.
I feel like it almost had a, I don't know the real story, so, but it feels like some had a hand in the end of that band in a weird way. Like, they're playing One Arm Scissor and kids are beating the shit out of each other like jocks, and they were really bummed.
Yeah.
You know, you can't choose your audience. Like, that's the other thing that's kind of, You know, like,
I did, and they're great. They're the best.
For you.
They're the best.
That is actually what's kind of cool about comics. You kind of, in a little way, you can kind of... You can't even. No,
I've got some weird things.
Yeah, because there's going to be dudes that... The minute you touch especially a major character, like a fucking Batman or a joke, forget it. Like, I've seen people get gnarly at dudes that, you know...
Well, there is this idea... Of course, it hasn't happened to me because everyone who comes to my shows is perfect. I love them all. I really do, actually. I really have not had any, like, dickheads. I think maybe one or two kind of drunk people. But for the most part, everyone's, like, really nice. Mm-hmm. And I feel really lucky that way. And now it just sounds like I'm pandering, even though I'm not. But I do think it's interesting that you can create a thing, and then at a certain point, it gets to become a thing that is really not yours anymore.
Yeah, it's not yours.
It belongs to everyone who's enjoying it, and then it's almost like, then you go, hey, I think I want to do this, and they're like, no, that's not how it works.
That's not how it works.
Like,
yeah.
I thought of the thing.
Not anymore. Right. Yeah. There's that. That does happen.
They take over as the president of the thing. Yeah. Like, the public is like,
you're just the figurehead.
Crazy.
Like, they, we're the board.
We're like driving you.
They kind of start to know it better than you, and you're like, no, but you don't, and... Then it gets into a fruitless battle.
We're driving you like the Star Whale from Doctor Who. Mm. We're on your back.
Yeah, Doctor Who! Fuck you, man.
He did it! Oh, God! Don't make fun of my referencing!
I'm not making fun of the referencing. I'm making fun of the reaction.
Oh, okay.
I actually can't. Oh, totally, I can't watch Doctor Who, and I know it's an awesome show, but I get too many fucking ideas when I watch it.
Like what?
Like, all I can watch basically is Downton Abbey. That's it.
Yeah. Do you hear who's going to be on next time? Paul Giamatti is going to be on Downton Abbey.
Get out of here.
What?
Yeah, he's the new cast member.
No.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's fucking great.
Yeah.
That's so, like, if I watch a show, even Breaking Bad, I can't watch that because I'll get some kind of idea. It's different with every show. If I'm watching Doctor Who, it'll be like, oh, well, now I want to write, like, 10 science fiction stories. And I go, oh, like, I'm not watching the show 10 minutes in. Breaking Bad, I'm like, oh, I just want to cook meth and do drugs now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to, yeah, exactly. I get too many ideas. So Downton Abbey is all I watch.
Or if you watch Walking Dead, I want to cut off a bunch of people's heads and pretend they're zombies.
Yeah, I like Walking Dead is another one that, like, it's like, wow, on paper, I should be watching this every week wearing the t-shirt, eating popcorn, fucking loving it. In theory, I would, but I watch it, and then I'm like, oh, I got an idea for something, and I just leave the room. It happens with any genre thing, you know?
Well, it's probably not a surprise, then, if your brain works that way. Like, why? I mean, for me... I think a lot of why I used to drink 20 beers a day was to try to silence the chatter.
That's exactly what it is.
Silence the chatter. Yeah, it's sort of like the, now enough people have seen Man of Steel. But when he's trying to adjust to he can hear everything, and it's like, you know.
Yeah, you develop like a system. You know, mine was like drink to get amped for the show to get ready.
Yeah.
Because you're tired and fucked up from the night before. Do the show, then because your adrenaline is, you know, chasing through your body at that point, even hours after you've performed. It's now 1 a.m., so then you just take a pill or a Xanax or something to shut it off. It's like you work out these systems, then you're hooked, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So. And it is sort of, your body doesn't like to take hard and right left turns chemically naturally.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, body, now all of a sudden I need to be able to do a two-hour show. Hey, buddy, can you just take it down a notch so I can get some sleep? It does not, if the body just wanted to do that.
Body, hey, sorry, me again.
Hey,
remember what I said?
You're not returning any of my calls. Yeah. Boop. Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
What the fuck?
Buddy, listen, buddy.
Hey, buddy. Leaving yourself messages to your brain. Yeah. But it is. It is... almost kind of a weird thing to have to figure out how to, all right, if I take a breath, I don't have to react to every impulse.
It's a lot of breathing. It involves a lot of breathing, you know? And a lot of things people don't understand, too, about addiction is that it's not something that goes away. And it's not something that relapses can't happen. Even if you inspire people to get clean or something, it's like there was a little bit of that I felt got lost in the message sometimes. At least my personal message was like, oh, well, you know, it was almost like a little bit of a watchdog thing on me, like, or is he clean or is he not? And then these wild theories and stories, and it's just like, people fuck up, people relapse. That's part of the recovery, like, is relapsing, you know? And one of the things I'm just really psyched about now is that it's been a really long time, you know, but I can't say it wasn't without relapses or missteps or anything like that. But
well, as long as when people fuck up that they don't do the thing that people sometimes do and then just go, oh, it's all ruined forever, fuck it all. And it's like, well, no, you may have fucked up today, but that doesn't mean you can still not fuck up tomorrow.
Exactly, and that's the point. And that, you're right, that's the shit that kills people and keeps them in the drugs or the drink, and eventually, yeah, kills them, you know, is the, oh, it's ruined. Like, you know, you have, like, I had like 6 years at one point, and then I didn't, and then...
It's easier.
What was I going
to
do?
It's easier to smash the castle. It's easier to smash the sandcastle. And I think a lot of people jump to that because that's easier to control sometimes. Is like destroying something is easier to control the outcome. Because you know, like, well, if I do this, I know what's going to happen.
You know what's going to happen. Exactly.
Yeah. Even though it's the worst thing.
It's the worst thing.
But having a kid for you must have given you something else to focus on outside yourself, which is probably a good thing.
That was amazing and brought about a lot of stress and a lot of turmoil in that way, though. But, like, I guess one of the things I'm most proud of now is that I feel like I've made it out the other side. I feel like I survived something awesome that I'm proud of, and I feel like I've figured out how to be a good dad, not just a dad. And it's an awesome feeling. A lot of people, I think, go through their whole lives looking for the confirmation from their kid if they were a good parent or not. But to me, what I realize is just be a good fucking parent.
Right.
Like, don't look for that shit, you know, because then you'll try to throw money at it or buy it off or something. It's like, you know, I'm not worried. Basically, I've hit a point now in my life, thankfully, where I'm not worried about that now.
Do you think when you have a daughter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do you think when she's a teenager, whatever the My Chemical Romance of her, are you going to get it? Or are you going to be like, turn that shit off. Come on. Look what those fucking people are wearing.
I'm sure.
Or is she going to be like, Dad, this is your CD cover from... Yeah, I don't... Yeah. You know what? It's not the same thing.
It's not... Yeah, these guys... Yeah. They're holograms. They're not even real people.
They're called the holograms.
Yeah.
What kind of retro girl is this? CD?
No, she was holding up the old... Because he's got to have the room of memories.
Yeah, I have some of those. Yep, I've got some of those.
Yeah, you know, that she's got to be able to make fun of when she's...
This thing, it's huge.
I actually fully support that shit. Like, I'm psyched to whoever is gonna be the Bieber when she's Bieber aged,
right?
You know, because you know, there's gonna be another Bieber.
Of course, you can't, you can, if you cut off the Bieber's head, two more Bieber heads grow in its place.
The soul of Bieber will go and invest in another body.
it's like Fallen. Yeah, it's like it'll just find a cat in the woods. This is the time I almost died.
He'll have the crossroad where it's like, all right, well, I'll be the Justin Timberlake, or I'll, you know, that is, he'll grow up is basically the point. But yeah, so whatever that is, when she hits that right age, I know I will be there, and I will be using everything in my book to try to get in. Like, did you know I was in a band? Or I was in a rock band. Could I get backstage? I'll pull all that shit. That's the only time I pull shit for my daughter and for free coffee, and that's it. Like, I'll try to be like, I'm gonna get recognized. <It's an>
Try to get backstage at your daughter's boy band.
I'm gonna
do it. And
that
band's like, oh yeah, I've heard of your band.
Yeah.
My parents lost their virginity to it. Get out of your old band.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. I can't wait. I can't wait for that shit. It's like that episode of Louie where he goes to Dane Cook to get the Gaga.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
I was like, I can't wait to do this shit. You know?
Well, of course, and I think it is safe to announce that your next musical project is the Trusty Punks.
The Trusty Punks.
Which
I'm going to be getting questions on the Twitter about it. Yeah.
What's the Trusty Punks?
It's punk music you can trust in.
Actually, I think it's just it's a bunch of trust fund kids.
No, I know, but I was trying to make it seem more epic.
Okay.
Hey. I didn't coin that. I think my wife did. I'm almost positive my wife
Well, she's
did.
The manager of the Trusty Punks. Of course she did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of course
she
did.
I think she referred to somebody as a Trusty Punk once in public. And it was just like, she says shit like that all the time, though, where I'm like, and she's like, oh, people say that all the time, and they don't, and she's just made it up.
She's including everyone to make it seem irrelevant.
Yeah.
So you're, but the new comic that is I know it's coming out monthly.
Yes.
And it just, if I'm not mistaken, it just launched. Did it launch Free Comic Book Day in May?
We did the Free Comic Book Day thing, and then last week, because it feels like, last week was the Beach Ball Secret Headquarters signing. It launched, and it was surreal. It was like, because also one of the things that's weird, it's a book about endings, and you know, I didn't know the band was going to break up. You know what I mean? So now this weird
posthumous brain knew.
Yeah, my brain was like,
isn't it weird? Your brain knows shit before your before your conscious mind.
And that series was written, and it's about loss and letting go and all kinds of stuff. Jeez. And it was weird. And so to have that kind of posthumously, is that how you say it?
Posthumously.
Posthumously,
yes.
Come out. It's very surreal, you know.
See, you were trying to express stuff, and you didn't. You just weren't aware of it yet.
Just in there.
But that's why it's kind of fun to have a couple of different forms of expression to play with. Is that one might reveal stuff about the other before you actually are even aware of it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to. I mean, I've been like making music. I'm fucking amped on it. So you know.
So so music is not. You'll keep doing
it. No, in fact, you know, I had a, oh man, I can't blow up the spot on what this comic was going to be. I was about to take a really amazing gig writing basically like a dream comic of mine, and it wasn't Batman, and it was going to be very amazing, and it just wasn't working. Like, I just never had the time. It definitely was happening around the breakup of the band, but I had planned, it was always like, I'll write comics if the band thing doesn't work. And it's like, no, like, you're a musician. Like, so what started to happen is I would literally get up to write it, and, like, my guitar was sitting there, and it's like, just write some songs. And I couldn't stop. And it had been years since that had happened. So I, you know, so unfortunately the comic I was working on isn't happening.
Was it DuckTales?
It was DuckTales. It was DuckTales. Yeah, imagine.
I'm going to do something really...
Oh, my God.
Gritty with it.
Yeah.
Huey's on drugs. Dewey is a prostitute. And Louie is a lawyer.
Launchpad, right?
Louie is Louie.
Yeah,
CK.
Launchpad.
You could do a lot of stuff with Launchpad.
He's a pimp.
Doofus, right? He's a pimp. That was a good show.
He got into the pimp game because he was running drugs. It's over.
It was drug running, probably.
Yeah, with the plane.
Yeah.
He would go down to Tailspin, wherever that was, get the drugs.
Wait, was Tailspin the island?
Tailspin, I don't know what the island was. Tailspin was their business.
It's like Margaritaville?
Yeah.
Tailspin.
He would go down there, he would go to fucking Jafar or some shit, get the drugs, and bring it back to Duckburg, and then give it to Huey to like bring into the kids.
Did they have the genie, though? Couldn't the genie just... Do they have to wish
him? Wait, did they have a genie?
That was in the movie. The DuckTales movie was the genie.
Oh, shit.
Who became a real boy.
I never saw the movie, I guess.
It's good.
Guess what we're doing next,
yeah,
guys?
Yeah.
Hey, come on, are we going to do it? What is the full name of the comic? It's a long title.
Oh, The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys.
Okay.
Yes, yes. Because that was also the name of the record. Because it couldn't do anything easy, and it had to be really long.
Everything?
You know? It had to be really long.
So that's available monthly now.
Yes.
In brick-and-mortar stores, and I would assume on Comixology as well, especially if it's Dark Horse.
But support your local comic book shop.
Support your local comic shop. Although, you know, I've said that before to Gaston. I was like, Gaston, I'm really sorry. I confessed to him like he's a fucking priest. Like, I used the Comixology app because I ran it. And he was like, dude, it's fine, man. We got a store in Comixology.
Yeah, yeah. So, they do. But, like, there's a lot of smaller stores
that don't.
Like, you know, like Secret Headquarters is just a little, you know, indie store. And
there was I went by when I was just in... Norman, Oklahoma, Speeding Bullet Comics. It's a cool little comic book shop right next to this place that I had dinner, like right next. Just cool, tiny little comic book shop. Still just a comic book shop.
Mm-hmm.
And
nice.
Really, really cool.
That's cool.
So support your local comic book store.
Absolutely.
And that's it.
Thanks for having me. That was awesome, guys.
Thanks for coming on.
That was awesome.
It was good to see you.
You too.
Enjoy
the I've been a fan of your work too. Like
what? Get out of fucking town.
Yeah, because you were the first person on TV that would host stuff that I remember was so self-deprecating that I was like, this is awesome.
I hate myself.
I love that though. But nobody hated themselves on TV like you back then.
Yeah. It's almost as if you were an alcoholic.
Dude, you won a nation of young dudes over like that because we all fucking hated ourselves.
Oh.
Sitting there just like, this guy's awesome, he gets it.
Well, I'll tell you honestly what it was that I moved a lot when I was a kid. I was never comfortable anywhere. I really did like the nerdy stuff I said I did, and it was not popular at the time,
right?
And so I always lived sort of I wanted everyone to like me, so I think that's where the comic thing came from. As I got older, I got really uncomfortable, and so I get this MTV show, and all of a sudden I'm surrounded by all these people that I never would have been comfortable around in college. And so I was just never comfortable. So I just got really, I made fun of myself. I made fun of everyone else kind of under my breath. And that was yeah. just sort of, that's where all that came out, was just like, I should not be around these fucking meatheads.
That's awesome.
So
yeah.
That was
it's good.
That.
It's good. It's really cool to identify that when it's happening, you know, because I had very similar experiences where I would be like, backstage of some weird VMAs thing, and I'd be like, I'm not supposed to fucking be here. I'm definitely bullshitting everybody.
I always felt like it was an us and them sort of a thing, yeah. where it's like, well, that's where all those cool people are behind that rope over there, but uh-huh. I'm over here because I don't know how to talk to, you know, like yeah. What I'm noticing about myself is that I could perform for a million people and if I'm in control of the situation I'm performing, I get a little nervous maybe, but I could do it. I really could feel like I could control the mm-hmm. room. But when I'm in social situations that I cannot, just out in public, I get really weird and shy, and, you know, people are like, you know, people, some guy said to me once, like, he goes, yeah, you know, you don't really give a lot back in person. So, you know, like, he just came up to me at a bar, like, you know, I was at a restaurant or a bar or something, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I feel really, you know, but not at our shows, I'm not that way. Right. Like,
no,
I'm
pretty outgoing at our shows.
Yeah.
I'm more that way.
Because it's sort of a, you know, it's like a safe environment, but when I feel like I'm outside a safe zone, I get really protective yeah. because I think just growing up, I just never felt comfortable in, and I was like afraid of the wild.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense. I don't know. Some people just they feel more comfortable. I don't know, being in front of a lot of, you can control it. Maybe it's a control thing. You know, you can kind of control it. It's weird.
It is. It is definitely a control thing. But all those are Are you still recording this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep recording. It's fine. These are all. Oh, keep
so
recording.
Glad I didn't say racist things.
Oh God. That's so.
The new LP from so Jonah
close.
Ray.
So close.
But I don't remember what I was going to say. I'm sure it was... Oh, I was going to say, those are all control issues, though. It's like, you know, drinking, whatever, drugs. It's just all eating disorders. There's just all control issues. Yeah. All of it. And it's funny that it can express itself in so many different ways, but when you peel back the layers, you're like, well, it's really this one issue.
Yeah, it's like, I'm just
responsible for
scared.
So many things. Yeah. I'm frightened.
I'm frightened of things.
I just want to feel safe for a uh-huh. minute. Yeah.
To me, I'm just bored of everything.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Fuck it, man. Yeah, see, like Jonah, I was afraid that I didn't get the chai latte exactly the way that I needed it because mm-hmm. I just wanted to feel safe. But you make it seem like I threw a giant tantrum. I think I was just like, where's that thing I need?
No, I didn't mean to make it seem like a tantrum, but it was exactly how you did it.
Yeah, where's that thing that I need that I rely on every day? That's the alcoholic thing bubbling up. Where's the thing that I
need to count on something.
I have to have it. It's the only thing.
It's the only thing I can do anymore.
Why doesn't this bored barista understand this is the only kid thing that I have today?
Yeah.
That I can rely on.
And when I said 20 minutes, I meant like there was no one else in there, and they looked at us and they didn't do anything.
Must have felt like an eternity.
Hoping like they were going to
leave.
Must
have felt like an eternity. What can you do in that time?
You keep on belittling my situation.
I know, it's fun.
But getting so defensive, but so defensive.
Must have been real weird that you didn't get what you wanted.
No, but if you think the thing... God, that's like two games of Golden Tee that you would have had to sit through in the bar there. 20 minutes.
It was a Black Bear diner. There was no Golden Tee there. Like your fucking booze hound friends play.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you guys were living it, man. You guys were fucking living it.
You try and find
Black
something
Bear,
open.
Red Bear shit, I don't care. I just need a place to take a shit.
You find something open in Wairika at 6 a.m.
But the meth lab is open at Wairika at 6 a.m.
We never close.
It's like a Del Taco and a meth lab.
Yeah.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.
Hey, listeners, it's Will Arnett. Our podcast, Smartless, has crossed a milestone that seemed unfathomable when we started nearly 4 years ago, as we've just released our 200th episode. Join us as we welcome the dynamic duo of hilarity, Steve Martin and Martin Short. You've seen them on screen together in The Three Amigos, Father of the Bride 1 and 2, and most recently, and only Murders in the Building. Both are comedic geniuses in their own right, but together they are always electric. And this episode of Smartless is no exception. I don't know if I've laughed more in a single episode than this one. We discuss their career arcs both separately and as a comedy team, how they met, who is more difficult to work with, and what motivates them today. Is Steve a better banjo player than Marty as a singer? Find out on this bicentennial episode of Smartless. Follow Smartless in the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Plus, you get to hear Sean cry. What a loser!